Are you fighting disharmony with disharmony? There you go, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Marianne. That's actually a rhetorical question because sure you are, and so am I. We are trained to fight disharmony with disharmony. I bet everybody on this call has heard this expression, fighting fire with fire. What does that really mean? Well, the first person we think used that expression 420 years ago was William Shakespeare in one of his plays. And so then if you were to add on to his reference, and it basically meant what you and I believe it means, it is, if somebody is mean to you, you be mean back to them even meaner than they were to you. But it got complicated in the 1800s in America, and this may have a reference to Europe and Asia as well. But in America, the early settlers started using a concept called backfires. So really what that meant is if a fire was coming toward them, what they would do is start a fire between that fire and their homes or their settlements. The idea being if they eliminated what that fire needed to feed on, you know, trees and bushes and leaves and other shrubs, that they would prevent the fire from continuing moving. So that idea of backfire is different, and it doesn't mean backfire like in a car or something of that sort, that noise. It is to eliminate the source of what the fire would feed on. That's a completely different concept than fighting fire with fire, the way we know it. So this is the main point about disharmony. Disharmony can lead to unhappiness. You know why? Because if you're disharmonious, people don't want to cooperate with you, and you're not going to want to cooperate with them. It can lead to illness. So the cells in your body no longer communicate effectively, and when cells and tissues and organs don't communicate effectively with one another, that's called illness and disease. And you can also see disharmony being a factor in the lack of success. Why? Because people will actively oppose disharmonious people. They will go into opposition. And now, with everybody against a person, that person's ability to achieve success kind of limited. But disharmony also can lead to a continued reaching out for harmony, like an orchestra conductor is obviously trying to make something happen. And so if he hears a discordant sound or something is out of harmony or out of tune or off key, what he's going to do is continue to reach for that. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. And so on. This is an interesting point. Some of the longest living people on the planet are orchestra conductors. Some of the people who die soonest after retirement are police officers. So let's see, orchestra conductor, police officer, who is dealing with harmony more and who is dealing with disharmony more? I think that's pretty clear. So just hold that thought because this is important to all of us in terms of health and happiness and success. So you can just imagine I'm a choir conductor at a church or in a high school or in a college or someplace, even an elementary school, and I want to create beautiful harmonies. How do I fight the disharmony of sour notes? Do I beat the kid who is making the wrong note? Of course not. Of course not. I don't fight the sour note. I do it over and over again. I'm trying to coax the right note. I'm helping that person become aware of how to create harmony. Think of a math teacher. If you or I were a math teacher in any level of education and the kid gets a wrong answer, how do we fight that disharmony of a wrong answer? Do we humiliate that kid? Do we send him into a corner? Do we put a dunce cap on him? Do we kick him out of the class and send him to detention? Or do we work to help them get the understanding, the awareness of how to become harmonious with whatever it is we're working on, the times table, addition, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, you name it. Of course, we would work to bring them into harmony with those concepts. A lot of us on this call are probably parents, or even more likely, we had parents. So how do we fight the disharmony of behavioral problems that are more likely to occur in children from the age 2 or 3, right? We're familiar with that. Terrible 2s, terrible 3s, and teenagers. How do we fight that? And we could fight it in a lot of traditional ways. Doesn't really serve us. Or we could try to increase the awareness of the child of what they're doing and why we are trying to impose some sort of control on them. So there are different teaching methods, but one of the dominant ones that is not so excellent but is very, very common that I have constructed this model, I call it management by disapproval. You're familiar with this, the look that you as a parent or you as a child got that look from your mother or your father, or you got that look from some teacher or some adult, that look. Or I can do that with our puppy dog, and she will stop what she's doing. She will take that as management by disapproval. So we make people wrong, and I'm going to take away my love if you don't do what I want. And that essentially is been modeled on every level. Even children do it to one another. I'm going to take my ball and go home, or you're not going to be in my club, or you're not going to be in my clique. And all of a sudden, kids start becoming really unkind to one another using this strategy of management by disapproval. That peer pressure can be really, really difficult and painful for people. But we're taught this stuff. We're taught this stuff. You ever hear this? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Exodus refers to that. Leviticus refers to that. Deuteronomy refers to that in the Old Testament. It's like, oh, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But then there was a big change. There was a big change with the New Testament. And then all of a sudden, Matthew is talking about, No. We've been modeled a new strategy, which is love. Now, all of a sudden, instead of meeting disharmony with disharmony, we're educated or encouraged, at least, to meet disharmony with harmony. Turn the other cheek. It's like, But it's pretty challenging because a lot of times we have been trained from the earliest ages to use this strategy. If somebody is mean to me, I'm going to be mean to them, and maybe even meaner, so they will not do it anymore. That's a very common thing going on here in the world, and I'll specifically speak about the United States, this idea of punishment. What is punishment? Well, let me just say that in the United States, we have the largest prison population of any country anywhere in the world. Wow. So you know we use punishment as a tool to disapprove of people's behavior. Is there a way to help them become more aware? Well, some of us think so. I recently read an article by a Supreme Court justice said the prison system in America is broken and it has nothing at all to do with correction. We're not trying to correct anything. We're punishing. It's like, not such a good idea. And it's not what some of us, from a religious standpoint, have been told is the ideal. So when you really look at it and say punishment, which is really fighting disharmony with disharmony. I saw something the other day, these two episodes or examples. I saw a guy in the news from Louisiana that was sentenced to 13 years in prison for having 2 marijuana cigarettes. Marijuana in some places is completely legal, and some places for medical purposes. But 13 years for 2 marijuana cigarettes. Wall Street, on the other hand, collapsed the economy of the country. These guys made billions of dollars, scammed a lot of people, to include the government and all of us taxpayers, and none of them went to jail, not even for 13 days, never mind 13 years. So you look at this and go, wait a minute, who's suffering from that crime of a guy carrying 2 marijuana cigarettes in his pocket? Exactly. I just went through the whole list of people, nobody. And who benefits? the guy who's getting paid 50, or I had a judge in Long Island tell me past summer, I said to him, you know, it cost about $50,000 to prosecute a guy for possession of cannabis. He said, no, no, Tom, that's not true. That's not true. It's $120,000 it costs to put that guy, judge him, put him in jail, and incarcerate him for 1 year. $120,000. Like, wow, who's making all that money? Not me and not you. It's actually our money. And how many people went to jail for the collapse of the economy? Nobody. Who suffered? Lots and lots of people. Foreclosures, lost their retirements, lost their pensions, lost all kinds of savings. Who benefited? Where did that money go? It didn't go up in smoke. Somebody ended up with it, not the people who should have had it. And you go, wow, wow. Yeah, we're really into punishment. Yeah, we are. But let me go back to disharmony and what it really means to you. Consider this question. What is your personal relationship with disharmony? What is it? What is your personal relationship? So let's just take criticism as a form of disharmony. And if you would rate that 0 to 10 for the next few questions I'm going to ask you, just see what number comes to mind. How intense was the criticism you experienced as a child? 0 to 10. Just write that down. How sensitive today are you to criticism? Do you need to be right? Are you argumentative? Or do you immediately withdraw from anything that looks a bit confrontational? 0 to 10. How critical are you of yourself? And if you listen to your self-talk, you probably have a clue. 0 to 10. How critical of yourself are you? And finally, how critical of other people are you? Are you fault-finding? Are you judgmental? Should they have done this and that and then the other thing? You go, wow, Here's one of the challenges in terms of disharmony. I'm a great believer in this concept of law of cause and effect. If there's an effect, there's a cause. If there's a cause, there's an effect. So we learned early on, this is how we learned that, in quotes, strong people criticize and weak people get criticized. You go, okay, let me think about that. You go, well, if those are the two types, a strong person who criticizes and a weak person gets criticized, guess what I want to be? I would much rather be a strong person. So, and that's natural. It's natural. We do want to be strong. We want to be big. We want to be powerful. Why? Because it helps us have a sense that we're safe, we're protected, we can have our needs met. We don't want to be weak. So we watch and go, okay, now I'm going to be like that strong person. Actually, being disharmonious is not a sign of strength, as you're going to learn from what I describe. You're probably already aware of this. But let me say this. Disharmony is an effect. It's an effect. It's not the cause. I believe awareness or the lack of awareness, not enough awareness or enough awareness, that's the cause. It gives us an opportunity to make more loving, kinder, more generous, or less generous, less kind, or more primitive, more brutal, crueler kind of reactions to people. It is awareness that we're looking for. You're familiar with all of these terms that I'm just going to run through really quickly. The wars, the war on cancer, the war on terror, the war on poverty, the war on drugs. Guess what? Guess what? We're not winning any of those wars. You know why? Because we're fighting the effects. Solutions to problems come from finding the cause. Treatments and, frankly, profits come from finding the effects. So people who don't continue to look for the cause of this, the cause of this, the cause of this, are stopping and then dealing with the effects. I don't know about you, but is it really possible that since the war on cancer, I think it was 1971, that had been declared, that all the billions, probably trillions at this point, of money invested in finding the cure for cancer, and we haven't done it? We haven't done it? Is it possible we haven't done it because we're not looking for the cause? We're looking for a patentable treatment that can make millions and billions of dollars for the people who control the patent. Just think of that. Could we possibly in 45 years not find the cause of cancer if we really were looking for it? It seems kind of astonishing, right? That you're like, wow, with all of those brains and all of that money and all of that research and all of that effort, we maybe they're looking for a treatment of effects. I was at the dental hygienist for a cleaning this morning, and we talked very briefly about energy healing and medicine. And she said, oh, I saw something on TV last night about a treatment of cancer that involves using viruses. Yep, a treatment of effect. Because I'm thinking cancer is not, oh, you're down a court of viruses. You don't have enough virus. You don't have enough chemo. You don't have enough radiation. You don't have enough scalpels. And that, of course, is silly. That is not really it. I think what we need to do individually and as a country, a society, is we need to look at this concept of consciousness for the causes to the disharmonies that we're experiencing. Cancer is not the only disease out there. When you start looking for ALS and any number of things, cause unknown, cause unknown, cause unknown. And we recommend the following treatments, A, B, and C, and D. It's like, okay. I think we need to look at consciousness. So individually, I'm suggesting that's what we need to do. Another way of saying that is we individually want to elevate our own levels of awareness. When you look at these wars, terror, drugs, poverty, cancer, it's like they say in the movies, follow the money. And you can find the suppliers of the equipment to fight those wars are the ones who are benefiting from it. But the collateral damage, individual human beings, not only in foreign countries, but our own troops. But in the United States, when you look at the causes, the primary causes of so many deaths, number 4 or 3 on the list of reasons people die in the United States, medical mistakes. Hospital, drug overdose, whoops, wrong drug, and so on. So, you might want to think there's got to be a better way. How can I make myself safer? You do that, in my opinion, by working on harmonizing our own consciousnesses. So you say, well, you know, I have a kind of normal life. I've got family members I love and some I like and some I'll put up with, and I have friends, some I love and some I like and some I put up with, and same with coworkers and so on. So where am I getting this disharmony? I'll tell you. You and I are watching it. We're watching it on the television. We're watching it and hearing it in news programs. I'll bet most people on this call have heard of Masaru Emoto. Dr. Emoto, a Japanese doctor, did some work on the effects of the consciousness of words it had on water. Then he would freeze the water and look at it under a microscope. So he would take the word love and scotch tape it onto a bottle of water, freeze it, take some ice from that bottle, and look at it. He would do the same thing with words like hate or disgust and other things that you and I would consider be negative. And the images were starkly different. This is a significant connection there, is the disharmony in those words or the harmony in those words affected water. Guess who on this call is about 75 to 85% water? Every single one of us. So when we connect and resonate with disharmonious words and energy, we are affecting the water in our bodies. Oh, by the way, guess which organ in your body has the highest water content? Not your muscles, not your heart, not your bladder, your brain. Your brain and my brain, that has the most water of any organ in the body. So let me think. Do we want the disharmony in the water in our brains? I don't know about you, but I go, not me. I would prefer harmony. I would prefer harmony. You go, wow, okay. So television. So you go, yeah, Tom, entertainment. I don't really take that in. You think? So let me just read through a list of words or energy patterns that I think we would want to eliminate from our consciousness. And then I'll tell you what I did. So here, aggression, inability to share with others, criticism, denigration. That's kind of like degrading other people, humiliating, ridiculing them, devising ways and means to become rich at the expense of other people, double and devious dealings of Wall Street, enmity, failing to perform your work conscientiously or give good value for money, falsehoods, hatred, intolerance, jealousy, judgmentalism, love of possessions, rejection, sarcasm, slander, snapping, snarling, stealing, thieving, violent impulses. Yeah, list, I don't know, maybe 20 items. I watch Hawaii Five-0. On February 27th, I watched Hawaii Five-0 with my checklist in hand, and I wanted to count how many occurrences of these energy patterns happened. Because I noticed previously that they show gruesome murder scenes multiple times for no reason at all. I'm going, wow. So I sat there and I recorded it. I came up with 9 examples of aggression, 6 inability to share with others, 16 criticisms, 10 denigration, 5 devising means to become rich at the expense of others, 8 double and devious dealings, and on and on and on. A total on that list of 92 projections of poisonous, toxic energies. Oh, by the way, there was theft. There was diamonds being stolen in there. Oh, yeah. There were 7 homicides in that episode. There were 2 experiences of indiscriminate shooting. And there were 2 short scenes of nurturing and caring. Wow, talk about disharmony. Holy moly. And I think if you were to look at news, a news program, or anything else that you wanted to watch other than, say, a Hallmark movie, you're going to have on that checklist a whole bunch of nasty things. You go, yikes, yikes. So we eat this, and we eat in chemicals, and we take in this stuff, and the things we read, and the conversations that we have, and the way we talk, and you go, I feel really angry about fill in the blank. It's like, wait a minute. If we think it, feel it, act it out, it's hurting our bodies. It's killing people that we reject. And it's killing us, too. Because the energy of rejection doesn't just go outward. It goes inward. And ultimately, it affects the cells in our bodies from communicating. And you go, yikes, yikes, wow. And when we say things of that kind of nature, any one of those items that I just listed, it goes outward. But just imagine our subconscious mind hears that and goes, uh-oh. We just threw a missile starting a war. We have to go into this self-protect mode. And I think that self-protect mode that Bruce Lipton talks about is another way of saying on a spiritual level, we are trying to shut down, unconsciously, of course, we are shutting ourselves off from our connection with the source of our being, with God, with our source of life. You go, wow, that's not what I intend to do. No kidding. But that behavior puts us into disharmony, and to protect ourselves automatically from a threat, the stuff we just said, that's what happens. And you go, wow, you know this. Every time you do something that's harmonious, when you help somebody else, you feel good. You feel good. When you hear music that sounds good, it's got great rhythm and the lyrics are decent, you feel good. You look around and you notice beauty, you feel good. That's harmony. That's harmony. That's what your body loves. That's what the cells of your body love. And you go, harmony, harmony. So, I think if we were to take a little bit of time and ask ourselves just a few questions, we could dwell on this. Here we are. Everybody is faced with this. And you're even faced with it because you're listening to me. You're like, this guy is fill in the blank. You can be disharmonious. You can be rejecting. You can be open. You can consider this. I'm not asking you to accept anything. I'm asking you to consider it. And if it passes your truth test, good for you. If it doesn't, good for you. Yeah. But you'll go, oh, I know I feel better when I'm in harmony. I know that. And I know when I love the people in my family and I love the people that I work with and I'm cooperative and they're cooperative, that feels better. At the end of the day, I feel better. They feel better. I come home. I'm happier. Everything improves in the environment. We're looking for harmony. A lot of different words, joy, happiness, consideration, cooperativeness, kindness, generosity, a lot of words. But harmony is a great word when we're talking about vibrations. So you look at a situation, and let's say you're with somebody, put it in the office environment, and this person is having a bad hair day. They're disharmonious. What we could do, instead of running away from them or having a worse hair day than they do to overwhelm them, we could go, wait a minute, what's the real cause here? What is going on with Joe? And you can start looking past this, you know, thunderstorm kind of energy that he may be experiencing, and you go, like, something going on in his life, some failing on his part. I think primarily that's what causes disharmony, our bad feelings about ourselves. Disharmony, I believe, is frequently, if not most of the time, rooted in self-disapproval, self-rejection, lack of self-acceptance. Like, ooh. In worst case, self-hatred. You get somebody working on self-hatred, that person is in terrible pain. And so how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? We on this call, and we in the Healing Codes clients, already recognize the idea that we can focus our attention on the best possible part of a Joe, no matter what kind of day he's having. We don't have to go into disharmony. We can hold our ground and be harmonious and give him an opportunity to shift out of that, kind of like a tuning fork that is sour, 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 and all of a sudden you or I are in his presence and we're positive. All of a sudden, he's got some other vibration to attune to. It's like a pitch pipe that a choir leader would use to help a kid find that note. You go, oh, that's what we can do. So if we look for the real cause instead of just jumping in and misunderstanding the effects as what we have to attack or fight or run away from. And a simpler thing we could do, we're about to do something or say something. Ask yourself this, is this an act of war or is what I'm saying an act of peace? And if it's an act of war, it's going to harm your body. You don't want to do that. It may be triggering this, but I'll be stronger than the threat. No, it's not true. It's not true. That's a primitive belief. And maybe it worked for a caveman, but it doesn't work in 2015. You're going to want to resonate with an act of peace. And the more you can choose that, the better your health, your happiness, and your success is going to be. And so when you look at a situation at home, at work, with a child, with a pet, with a partner, with a friend, with an employee, with a customer, with a coworker, with a stranger, ask yourself this. Will what I'm about to do add harmony? And if it will, you're going to feel better about it. You're going to feel better about it. And inevitably, they're going to as well. I talked about the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. If you sow seeds of harmony, you can count on your harvest of being more harmonious. I recommend that. The way to deal with disharmony, not to fight it any way at all, is to stay in a place of harmony.
Before we go, I'm going to ask Tom to tell a story about someone with a brain tumor. Tom, could you recant that story, please?
Yeah, here's the idea. This was a woman who got ill, and she had wanted to have children, couldn't have children, wanted to have children, couldn't have children, and then was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Because she was a doctor, she decided against medical treatment of a traditional nature and decided to try to approach it as alternatively. So what she did is do an enormous amount of research about this brain tumor. And as she was researching, she came across this fact. People with that brain tumor become infertile. She said, wow, that's amazing. This brain tumor prevented me from having babies. I wanted babies, but maybe something in my background suggested not. So she arrived at this conclusion, and in the context of what I was talking about, she decided to harmonize. She said, you know what? I'm going to have this brain tumor as long as I'm going to have this brain tumor. I'm not going to fight it. I'm going to accept that it's there, and it's going to be there as long as it's going to be there. And I'm going to try to understand it. I know the body is unbelievably intelligent. It's been designed that way. I'm going to try to understand that. And as she thought about not being able to have children, she realized, she thought about her own childhood, and it had been terrible, terribly abusive. And so now the possibility occurred to her that she didn't really, on a subconscious level, want to bring a child into the world if that child was going to have a childhood like she had. And even though her lips were saying, I want babies, I want babies, I want babies, her body was saying, no, we don't, no, we don't, no, we don't. So she decided that she was going to accept it and learn from it and try to recognize that it was serving a purpose. She was trying to understand that. So about 6 months later, she went back to the doctor, and he said, well, whatever it is you're doing, continue doing, because your tumor is shrinking. So after, I think it was 18 months or 24 months, I forget now from that documentary, she went back, and the tumor was completely gone. She used what we have been told in our religious education that love is the solution. Today I'll say harmony is a solution, but that's just another word for love. We love and accept the existence of something and shine light on it without hating it or fighting it or running away from it. We use this higher vibration approach to things, and we can resolve them just like she did with the brain tumor. I think that's a very clear example of how important harmony can be to each one of us in our lives, in business, in our relationships, and in our physical health.
Tom, thank you so much for that.